every Shabbos when we get up to Shacharis, Shemona Esrei, we say Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelko. He even neman karasalo. Hakadosh Baruch Hu, after Moshe Rabbeinu, should be happy. Yismach Moshe, what's he so happy about? B'matnas chelko, when he was given his portion. So the Rishonim explain what the line in Shemona Esrei is talking about. What's Moshe so happy about? He was happy when Hashem gave the Torah, gave the Esrei Dibros, and one of the 613 mitzvahs was mitzvah Shabbos. Because Moshe Rabbeinu already had the anfal from long ago that Shabbos would be a good idea for the Jewish people. Namely, the Medrash tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu was growing up, before he ran away to Midian, so Rashi says, he was a member of the high-ranking government official. He was from the royal family, and he was involved in what was going on. And he had the opportunity to suggest to Paro that he alter his policies about the slavery of the Jewish people. In particular, the Medrash tells us there's two different versions. Moshe Rabbeinu was out and about, and he saw the whatever it was they were building, Pisom and Ramses, and he noticed that they were working 7 days a week. And whatever they would build on Shabbos, after Shabbos was over, it would all fall down. Okay, so like there was no point. There's another version of the Medrash that says that whatever they built the entire week on Shabbos, it fell down. So he notices this, and he says, you know what, it really doesn't make sense. You might as well just give everyone a day off, they'll rest, they'll be stronger when they get back to the office on Sunday. Why make them work 7 days a week when clearly they're not gaining anything from what they're doing on Shabbos? Either because it's all falling down on Shabbos, or maybe if we give them a break on Saturday, then nothing will fall down, and you'll still be able to hold on to what they have from Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So Paro says, Taka, you're right, and he gives them a day off on Shabbos. And Yismach Moshe is happy later when the Jews receive Shabbos as their, one of the underpinnings of Yiddishkeit, because he already knew ahead of time that it would be a good idea for the Jewish people to have that day off. And ultimately, the Medrash tells us that they used to learn on Shabbos. Okay? It's a good thing to do. Very important to take advantage of Shabbos. And that's where Shabbos comes from, so to speak, in its earliest iterations for Klal Yisrael. The question is, okay, so I hear what Moshe Rabbeinu was suggesting for the Jews, but Paro was not a fool, right? He had masterminded a plot to keep the Jewish people, millions of people, enslaved in order to protect the security of his country. So couldn't he figure out, that the productivity was slowed because he wasn't giving anybody a break, right? Everyone knows you got to give a chance to breathe. So why wasn't he doing it? So the answer, I believe, is because Paro was very wise. It wasn't just about enslaving the people, and it certainly wasn't about the productivity. There was a psychological warfare here as well. And we find in the Haggadah and other sources that there are many different angles through which Paro was trying to kill the spirit of the people and just knock them down emotionally and psychologically. He wanted to make sure that they never even tried to revolt. They never even tried to rebel. The Pasuk says, Nitziv notes this, fascinating. Pasuk says that at some point during the slavery, Vayomas Melech Mitzrayim, the king of Egypt, there was more than one Paro through the story. Paro dies. Vayonchu Me'avoda, the Jewish people sighed and they let out this groan from the hard work. They cried out to Hashem. Hashem listened to them, and that was the beginning of the process of the Gula. The question is, what? They only started groaning from the work when Paro died? What about the last decades and decades of slavery? It just says something unbelievable. He says, if a dignitary, if the president, if the prime minister dies of any country, so it's like a national day of mourning, and they close the stores, and they're, the post office is closed that day, and the banks are closed, and everybody comes out and observes this day of mourning for the king. So the same thing happened in Egypt. Everyone had a day off. But this was the first day off that the Jewish people had in 210 years of slavery. It's the first time that they actually got to sit at home and think and consider, wait a minute, like, what's going on in our lives? Is this really like where we want to be? Like, life was moving and moving and moving. Every day they had to go back and build the pyramids, and they finally had a day off to think. And then they let out this groan and they cried out to Hashem. Because sometimes our life is just so nonstop, we don't get a chance to reflect on whether or not our surroundings, where we're headed, is where we want to be heading, or if we even know where we're heading. And sometimes we don't. Mesilas Yesharim, you know, in the same way that like the snake in Gan Eden is like the paradigm of the Yetzer Hara, right? He's like the Yetzer Hara incarnate, right? The supervillain. So there's other supervillains who also have that, you know, Yetzer Hara status, and Paro is one of them. Paro is also the Yetzer Hara incarnate. Mesilas Yesharim writes towards the beginning that's exactly what Paro was trying to do. He was trying to move everyone faster, faster, and faster, to the extent that they never had the chance to even consider if the way their lives were headed and the existence of slavery was something they should be satisfied with, or they should try to push back, try to revolt, try to get out. And we know when Moshe Rabbeinu was interacting with the people, right? What does it say? Lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach meavod hakasha. The Taka couldn't even hear the messages that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them, that it was time to get out of there, simply because it was so much weighing down on their psyche, the slave mentality, they didn't even consider that there was an alternative. That's very big. That's very big. Paro was trying to encourage that same inability to think outside of the box. And interesting chiddush, just to take a little further, Paro, so we translate it as Pharaoh. But no word in the Torah is by accident. Every word, 205, has a root, okay? Pei resh ayin means two things that are so relevant to what we're talking about. If you look in the pasuk in Kisisa, Hashem tells Moshe, the Jewish people have created this egel. Go down there because they've already gone off the derech after just a short amount of time. Soru maher min haderech asher tzivisim. They've already soru maher. They quickly left the path that I commanded to them. The unklus translates over there. Satu means they've gone off. Bifria. Pei resh ayin, same letters as Paro. Maher is translated by the Targum as Pei resh ayin, the same shorish. Because that's Paro. Speed, push. Not only that, but in Parsha Shemos, what happens? Moshe and Aaron say we're taking the Jews out, and what does Paro say back? He says, no, you guys are too lazy, you need more work, so he makes them make their own bricks, right? Bring your own straw. Make your own bricks. And he says, Lama Moshe Aaron tafriu es ha'am mimasav. Why are the Jewish people tafriu? What is tafriu? It's a mafrioti. It's bothering me. It's distracting me. Moshe Rabbeinu is told, and Aaron told by Paro, be quiet. You're distracting the people from the work they have to be doing. Because that was Paro. He pushes you so fast that you're distracted from even realizing what's going on around you. We learned this lesson from the space program. 1969, astronaut Rusty Schweiker was out on the umbilical cord. You know, that's like you also see in the pictures, he's like floating out there in space. So something went like very wrong, and some of the equipment was malfunctioning. So everyone on the ground, you know, in Houston, and everyone on the ship had to focus, drop what they were doing, focus on fixing something in with the equipment. And he was just like floating out there. Now, it's not like treading water. When you float in space, orbit around the Earth is 17,000 miles per hour. So he is floating, going around, you make one revolution around the Earth every hour and a half. Right? That's where the Shiloh, like how many times I put on my tefillin during the day if I'm in space. 17,000 miles an hour. Talk about going fast, okay? But he had nothing to do. He was just there. So they asked him afterwards, like, what were you thinking? So he said, I was looking at this picture of the Earth from space. And this is what he said. He said, absolute silence, looking down on the beautiful blue Earth, the questions just enter my mind. What does this mean? How did I get here? Who am I? And when I read that quote, it's unbelievable, because you need that absolute moment of silence in the vacuum of space sometimes to just stop and ask yourself those questions. Like, what am I doing? I need that on a personal level. As an Oved Hashem, I need to be thinking like that. I need to be asking myself, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing, more or less of what I'm supposed to be doing? I wasted 3 hours on my Sunday afternoon. Like, you know, I could fill half an hour of that time with a chavrusa and only waste 2.5 hours of my Sunday and feel so much more productive with my time. The Iker lesson to take out of these parshios, now we're up to Bo, the Makos, Jewish people are about to leave Mitzrayim. But what was the major transition that they experienced? A major transition that they experienced was they stopped being slaves. And to stop being slaves means they were broken from that, they broke out of that box that does not allow them to think. And I think every single one of us knows there are times in the semester where, like, we don't even have time to breathe. And we're not thinking about if our time is being managed properly, if the way we're spending our time is the way we want to be spending it, because we're just like rushing to get to the next class, to take the next test, to finish the next homework, and our priorities don't always come to the forefront. And sometimes we overwork ourselves. We put more effort into things that we don't need to, and minyan or learning other things, unfortunately, take a hit because we can't even think long enough to be able to put it all in perspective. So I want to say just point number one, then I'm going to stop the recorder. Point number one is that's what we need to do now at the beginning of the semester. Set yourself up. He's still writing notes. Set yourself up that you don't get to a point in the semester that you can't help yourself anymore. And if you do, call me or text me and say, Rebbe, I need to sit down with you for 5 minutes and just figure this out. Okay?